Rockwired Sound in Albuquerque, New Mexico, of all places. This is Rockwired Radio Profiles with your host, Brian Lush, exclusively at rockwired.com. On today's show, Rockwired Profiles, Handful of Lovin' and their latest CD, Life in Between. Stick around for more. Rockwired Radio Profiles is a production of Rockwired Media, LLC, a limited liability company. Please stand by. Welcome to the latest edition of Rockwired Radio Profiles. I'm your host, Brian Lush, and the music is out there. In doing this daily series of podcasts, I'm constantly blown away by the sounds that come Rockwired's way. Today, I'm giving it up for the first ever jam band to come to Rockwired for the purposes of radio. The Seattle-based Handful of Lovin' has just released their latest album, Life in Between, and according to the band's violinist, Andrew Jocelyn, the album is a step up musically and creatively. I had a chance to speak with Andrew about the band's new album, and you'll hear all that in just a few minutes. From the CD, Life in Between, here is Handful of Lovin' with Born Lucky.
Nature.
From their CD Life in Between, that was Handful of Lovin' with Born Lucky. Visit the band at their official website, www.handfuloflovin.com. I had a chance to speak with Andrew Jocelyn of Handful of Lovin' over the phone. Here's how it went. Well, Life in Between is a great CD, and now that it's out there for people to hear, how do you feel about the end result?
You know, so far, the end result, I mean, we're still gauging everything. The thing is, we're still actively in marketing. With, you know, getting the album out there, we've been heavily pushing the album through radio promotion. We have a firm out of New York that we've been working with extensively, and we've also been working with an internet marketing firm out of L.A. So, you know, we're seeing results, though. Really sizable, gaugeable results, which is really nice for us, just because, you know, we've been relatively sequestered to the Northwest for our last two albums. So when this one came out, it's one that we're, number one, really proud of. We put a lot of time into it, a lot of effort, and you know, it's all self-produced, it's all self-recorded. I mean, we worked with a number of notable producers and engineers, you know, from around the Northwest. However, it's still, at its core, our own product, you know, which is really exciting for us that it's actually getting so much, I guess, renown, you know, and respect, you know, from different various sources, so.
And how do you feel this album is different from your previous two releases?
Well, for example, our first album that we recorded, which was called Balance, we recorded that back in 2005. We recorded that in the basement of a friend's apartment in college. You know, we had very limited resources. We were just a bunch of college kids just having fun. We wanted to put together a product, more than anything, just to show off to our friends and try and get girls to like us, you know, that kind of thing. So it's, the thing is, it's, you know, that album was, you know, when we first released it, it was really pure, it was really honest, you know, but the production value of it was pretty shoddy, you know. I mean, there was a lot of, like, there was a couple of songs where it was kind of like one-take wonders. We just had enough time and enough money to pay the engineer we were working with, you know, that, you know, like, there was one song where it's just like, I had one take and that's it, you know. If I didn't get it, if my violin wasn't going on the track, so. In comparison, you know, with this new album, we were able to take time, we were able to perfect everything, you know, we were able to really kind of, the thing that's most important for us with this new album is we were able to make a concept album, you know, which was kind of something far beyond the last two albums. The last two albums were just kind of loose collections of songs that we just kind of put together, and we didn't really have any rhyme or reason to it, you know. In like our lead singer and the songwriter David John, you know, he wrote about a huge variety of experiences that he'd been dealing with and different struggles he'd been coping with. However, you know, with this last album, Life in Between, we tried to have a full on overarching theme with the whole entire album. So, like, for example, Life in Between is really, I mean, for lack of a better phrase, it's about life. You know, the very first song is called Born Lucky, and essentially it's about being born into, you know, I guess the take a step back. Born Lucky is about, you know, privileged children. It's about kids that are being pushed to, you know, like the little Michael Jacksons of the world, and the, you know, and kids that are really pushed into, you know, because they're talented, but really the parents are really pushing them towards a, you know, a goal in life, you know. But however, what happens is, you know, how it's difficult to know, like, how far you can push their passion before it breaks, you know, and how much of it is the kids really being passionate about their work, or is it the parents that are kind of trying to live vicariously through their kids, you know. And I think that makes sense.
It makes a lot of sense.
so that was kind of like, okay, bam, track one, it's about being born into this life with expectations and stuff. And then as the album progresses, you know, it you know, we kind of handle different aspects. We, you know, we talk about love, We talk about, you know, friendships, and, you know, for example, Breadcrumbs is a song that David John wrote about a friend of his, an old manager of his when he used to be a solo artist. And, you know, it's just kind of, I mean, it's another song about expectation and, I guess, like social acceptance and dealing with peer pressure and that kind of stuff. You know, I wish David was on the line, because, you know, he would be expounding on this and going off and giving a whole big tirade about all this. But, you know, the main thing is, when you get to the middle of the album, I think it's like track 6 or track 7, there's a song called The Pilgrimage.
Yes.
Actually, it's just an instrumental, and we took audio clips from this 1960s philosopher, Alan Watts, who talks about life and music as a metaphor for life. And, you know, one of the major crux of that lecture he talks about is kind of like the midlife crisis, you know, like how all of a sudden people are always reaching out for this kind of goal in the future. You know, they're stuck in the rat race. They're stuck in the rat race. And then when they finally get to their 40s, their 50s, and they, you know, attain whatever life they've been trying to go for all these years, all of a sudden they realize the vast majority of their life has passed them by, because they've been, you know, always trying to go forward and grab for something that's, you know, in the future, but they haven't been living in the present. So, you know, life in between really is, I mean, it's just like, you know, I mean, you can get into the existential nitty gritty if you want, you know, but it's like, you know, it's living in the moment. Life in between what? The past and the future and whatnot, but it's kind of cool for us that, you know, we sat down. Really, it was kind of, the concept was kind of something that both David and I hashed out together. You know, we sat down and just kind of figured it out. And, you know, so, like I was saying, you know, like, in the middle you have the pilgrimage, and that's like the midlife crisis. And then the very end of the album, you kind of start dealing with retirement and going on. And the song Glass Ceiling is actually a song that David wrote, you know, hypothetically to his kids in the future, about, you know, like, just live your life and don't worry about that glass ceiling that might be there, you know, try and break through the glass ceiling, you know, like, so it's almost, it's very reflective, it's almost like an epilogue at that point, you know. And, you know, we have an instrumental towards the end, Harry Met Rona. It's, you know, it's two traditional pieces that are meshed together. However, it's also, I don't know, it's kind of tumultuous and stuff, and I've always kind of seen it as kind of a an instrumental love song between, you know, I don't know, it's two traditional pieces, one's Harry's Lock and one's Rona Morgana, so it's kind of that intermarriage. And then the very end we have Fingers, which is just kind of that's really an epilogue track, because we just take another selection from Alan Watts and just inject it at the very end, along with some beats and some instrumental stuff that our bass player Patrick Files put together.
Writing basically comes down to you and Dave then, right? Or is it just
really,
him and...
To be honest, David John is at the core really the songwriter. He comes with songs to the band. We do all the instrumentation, you know. We help with the arranging, and, you know, Mike, myself, and Pat. Mike is the drummer, Pat's the bass player, and I of course play violin. We will, you know, we'll try and give feedback on songs that he brings to the table, and then try and work with him in different, you know, sometimes lyrically, but mostly just in the arrangement. So, but all in all, for the vast majority of the songs, I'd say, you know, like 75 to 80% of the songs, it's David's writing.
I see. And talk about the genesis of the band. How did it begin?
Originally, the band began with... So David John was originally a solo guitarist and singer-songwriter up in Bellingham, just north of Seattle. And both, you know, like, I met him in college, and at the time I was playing... I was just doing classical music. I was in a music performance degree at Western, and our girlfriends at the time they knew each other, and then introduced both David and I to each other. So at that point, point, David would kind of get into disillusion. He didn't want to be doing kind of the solo guitarist, singer, songwriter, a career choice anymore. And then also, I didn't want to be playing classical music anymore. I didn't want to become an orchestra drone, and I didn't see a viable future in classical music for myself. So we, the girlfriends introduced us to each other, and then, I don't know, there was a spark. We just started playing music together, and mostly it just started off with coffee shops at first, and then, we actually played we played a couple of rugby girl parties, and like there's a couple of other random parties we played. Eventually we just started incorporating different members into the group, kind of experimenting with different styles and different personalities. We used to have an electric guitarist in the band. We had a hand percussionist for a while in the band. But in the end, I think it took us about a good two and a half years of kind of evolving and developing before we actually met and solidified with Patrick Files on the bass and with Michael Knight on drums. And, they really provided David and I with this really solid, really reliable rhythm section. And, that's one thing that's really great is Pat and Mike have been friends forever. I mean, they've known each other all through, I think, at least through high school, but I don't know if it goes further back, like elementary school and stuff, but they both grew up in Shoreline, Washington. So one thing that's great is, there's that camaraderie between the two of them, and then you bring that into the fold with both David and myself, and then that's how the band has kind of gotten to where we are right now.
Visit the band at their official website, www.handfulofloving.com. From their CD Life in Between, here is Handful of Lovin' once again with The Pilgrimage.
In music, one doesn't make the end of a composition the point of the composition. If that were so, the best conductors would be those who played fastest. And there would be composers who wrote only finales. People go to concert just to hear one crashing chord, because that's the end. Say, when dancing, you don't aim at a particular spot in the room. That's where you should arrive. The whole point of the dancing is the dance. Now, but we don't see that as something brought by our education into our everyday conduct. We've got a system of schooling which gives a completely different impression. It's all graded. And what we do is we put the child into the corridor of this grade system with a kind of, come on, kitty, kitty, kitty. And now you go to kindergarten, And that's a great thing, because when you finish that, you'll get into first grade. And then, come on, first grade leads to second grade, and so on. And then you get out of grade school, you go to high school, and it's revving up, the thing is coming. Then you're going to go to college, and by Jove, then you get into graduate school. And when you're through with graduate school, you go out to join the world. Then you get into some racket where you're selling insurance, and they've got that quota to make, and you're going to make that, and all the time the thing is coming, it's coming, it's coming, that great thing, the success you're working for. Then when you wake up one day about 40 years old, you say, my God, I've arrived. I'm there. And you don't feel very different from what you always felt, and there's a slight letdown because you feel there's a hoax, and there was a hoax. A dreadful hoax. They made you miss everything by expectation. Look at the people who live to retire and put those savings away. And then when they're 65, they don't have any energy left. They're more or less impotent. And they go and rot in an old people's, senior citizens' community. Because we've simply cheated ourselves the whole way down the line. We thought of life by analogy with a journey, with a pilgrimage, which had a serious purpose at the end, and the thing was to get to that end, success or whatever it is, or maybe heaven after you're dead. But we missed the point the whole way along. It was a musical thing, and you were supposed to sing or to dance while the music was being played. But you had to do that. You didn't let it happen.
Talk about the other members of the band and what it is you think each of them brings to the table, not just musically, but personality-wise, that makes this thing work.
It's, the funny thing with the band is it's a lot of, you know, there's a lot of chaos in the band. That's the thing that's really interesting is, you know, we kind of, out of chaos, a lot of the, our most beautiful pieces are kind of put together. So I guess, you know, the best way to kind of describe what each person brings to the table is first talk about their influences individually. So, for example, David, as I said beforehand, he's the singer, but he's, you know, one of the principal songwriters of the group. You know, at its core, he's the catalyst that gets a lot of stuff started. One of his principal influences is like Paul Simon and Wilco, you know, with Jeff Tweedy. Also, there's an old Seattle group called the Actual Tigers, and Tim Seeley, that's a really big inspiration to him. Other inspirations are like, let me think, like Bob Marley, Crosby, Stills, and Nash. Like, you know, a lot of the classics, you know, really reaching back, you know, because that's something that was really important to his family and to himself. And then with Patrick, who's the bass player, he has a completely different background when it comes to music. You know, originally he was an electric guitarist, but then he came to the bass, and he, you know, most of his influences come through thrash metal, like Pantera and Hymza, and which is really funny to see, because when, in regards to, like, the group dynamic, you know, a lot of times he will be playing higher up on the neck with the bass, so it's almost, he'll play it more as a lead instrument sometimes, and which is, you know, it lends itself to a kind of a different sound when it comes to, like, the rhythm section with the band. Personality-wise, though, you know, aside from the music, you know, Patrick is definitely, you know, he's one of the more outgoing members of the group. You know, when we're on tour and when we're on the road, he's very much, you know, he wants to meet the festival promoters, you know, he wants to speak with the bookers and stuff. I mean, overall, we're actually a really solid group of jovial and, I mean, cordial individuals. Like, we'll go out and we'll really try and make a good impression on everyone. Not just because, but that's just how we are, you know. So, and with Michael Knight, who's our drummer, he's been in a lot of different groups. You know, he's had a lot of different influences. He used to play with a jam band called Caraway out of Shoreline, you know, just like a high school group. However, he's played with this group that was recently signed by Barzook called Blunt Mechanic. And he also plays and teaches at the Northwest Paul Allen School of Rock. So he's immersed in classic rock songs all the time. You know, I mean, he does showcases on, you know, Led Zeppelin and, you know, the Meters and a bunch of other stuff. So what he brings to the group is precision, and when we're practicing, you know, Michael Knight is definitely, you know, he acts as the the kind of the typical metronome. You know, he'll keep everything in time. He'll make sure to keep us all together. You know, and that's something that's really important with all of our stuff, especially with our live shows, because we try and keep, you know, a level of performance tightness while we're on stage. And so, when, you know, personality-wise, that really, you know, that diligence, or that, I guess, that persistence to, or what is it, attention to detail is what's really important, you know, and that's really appreciated when it comes from Mike. I guess for myself, you know, musically, influence-wise, like, I don't know, the thing is for me, like, I'm originally a classical violinist, but then once I met David, kind of, I branched out to completely different genres and completely different styles. So for me, I always look at other violinists and other groups, you know, in indie folk and rock and, you know, anything that's experimental, there where I can kind of derive some kind of influence from. So if, like, you know, like, I really love Andrew Bird, you know, as a solo artist as well as with his group. And but I also, for example, like Mumford and Sons and Noah and the Whale, and there's a lot of kind of indie folk groups that are coming out now that utilize the violin in their layout, which is, you know, it's both an inspiration. I don't know, it's really encouraging for me to see that happening a lot, you know, a lot more now. And I guess personality-wise with the group, I don't know, I sometimes act as the group's spokesman to a point, because David is a bit more reserved, especially as a frontman. But then, like, I don't know, I handle a lot more of the kind of the business side of stuff. So, it may be just by default, I don't know, I don't necessarily like it, but it's kind of just thrown on me.
Well, jeez, bird me all over the place.
I don't know. I know. What is it? The squeaky wheel gets the grease.
I guess so. Since the band's formation up until now, what's been the biggest surprise for you? What's happened that you didn't expect?
Ooh. I mean, there is a couple of things that's happened over the years that's been a big surprise for us. I mean, originally when David and I just put this group together, it was just kind of a side project, you know. It was just a fun little extracurricular thing to do on the weekends, you know, after school and after, you know, studying for college. But then, you know, I guess the number one surprise is just to see what kind of effect it's been having on audiences, and just kind of the snowball effect it's had, you know, just the amount of fans we've started garnering in the Northwest, and I guess just the, you know, the tie into that is one of the biggest things that was really exciting for us and really a big surprise is, you know, we were offered a slot at the Gorge in Washington. Which is kind of like our, I guess, you know, our version of like the Red Rocks, or like, it, you know, it's a huge, huge venue, really well respected. And we got to open up on a side stage for Phish in concert
Wow.
that summer. And that was just, it blew our minds. We're just like, oh my God, we're gonna have this ability to, you know, play before this like iconic group, you know. And I mean, that was really huge for us. Also, you know, we've had the ability to play with a lot of different, pretty big name acts. I mean, you know, like the Proclaimers. Yeah, let me think. You know, if I would walk 500 miles.
Yeah. Yes. So, I'm kidding.
Yeah, we got to open up.
Yes. I'm kidding.
Okay, maybe that's not an iconic group, but we still had a good time opening up for them. And like we've worked with like Young Dubliners before, like Hot Buttered Rum. The Brett Denon is another artist that we actually, before Brett Denon got big, Brett Denon actually opened for us up in Seattle. It was like one of his first Seattle gigs, and we agreed, I guess his manager at the time needed to try and get more of a Seattle audience for Brett, so they'd asked us the headline at the Tractor, so we had Brett Denon open for us, and it was just really surprising and really fun to see, you know, a group that we originally, you know, we played with a couple of years back all of a sudden get really big, and, you know, Brett Denon's playing all over the place, and I mean, he's touring now with, gosh, you know, like John Mayer, he's working with Jason Mraz. I mean, he's all over the place right now. So, what else? You know, another thing that was really surprising is that, you know, this last summer, we actually also had the opportunity to play at the Bumbershoot Festival in Seattle, which is, you know, it's just another just big opportunity for us, you know, that we had. And it was a lot of fun. The thing that was really interesting is they gave us a pretty lame slot for performing, which was, it was about 1 o'clock on Sunday, and it was rain, it was pouring, and it was just dismal, and we were all freaked out. We didn't think that we would actually be able to play, you know, because the sound engineers and stuff, while we were getting our stuff set up on stage, they were like, you know, if lightning strikes, we're gonna cancel the set. So we were freaked out. And, like, literally, I remember we were bringing our stuff on stage. We actually had little plastic parkas around our pedal boards so that nothing would, like, short-circuit on stage, and there was puddles everywhere. And right when we walked out, sun just came right out, and the entire mural amphitheater lawn where we were playing was completely packed. And, I mean, for us, that was, like, you know, we're just... You know, we're a local Northwest band in Seattle, so to all of a sudden see so much overwhelming support, especially on such a really dismal day, and all of a sudden sun comes out and everyone's there. It was that. I think for me, that was like one of the most encouraging and empowering moments for me as a musician, at least with Handful 11.
What would you like someone to come away with after they've heard this album?
With the album, I really hope they enjoy it. You know, I think that's any artist's hope, is that, you know, an audience, you know, some consumer, an audience member will enjoy the album and will have some kind of connection, you know, either emotionally or, you know, and that's the thing, is there's a lot of emotional content on the album. Be it instrumentally with, like, you know, like a flare of a violin or a guitar strum or something. It's like, I guess, having some sort of emotional connection with the album, you know. And I guess more than anything, I hope it's enough of an impact on that person listening to it that they'll want more, that they'll want to come back and they'll want to hear the other albums, and or they'll actually want to come out and see us live, just because, you know, with any band, you know, if you see them live, it's a completely different energy, and it's a sometimes it's a more intimate way of getting to know a band, other than, you know, on a CD. So I think that answers your question.
Visit the band at their official website, www.handfulofloven.com. From their CD Life in Between, here is Handful of Lovin' once again with Glass Ceiling.
High up around you, your blessing again. working as you always. I hope round to your blessing and keeps you away from the clouds of imagination. Feel yawn is true.
That's going to do it for this edition of Rockwired Radio Profiles. A special thanks goes out to Andrew Jocelyn of Handful of Lovin' and to Chip Schutzman of Miles High Productions. Once again, visit the band at their official website, www.handfulofloving.com. For Rockwired, I'm Brian Lush, and remember, keep your eyes forward, never look back, and make it up as you go. Rockwired Radio Profiles is a production of Rockwired Media, LLC, a limited liability company, and is available exclusively at rockwired.com.